I think one thing that needs to be solved with herbal tea is this.
So much. So annoying.
It's the wrong thing. Like, I love the way, like, at least when I became an adult, I started hooking it around the handle of the mug. Because when I was a child, I didn't know how to do that.
And then
I don't
it
know.
Just, like,
you just slop in, and then you drink, and you just have papery things, and you have to, like, block your mouth as you tipped your head back, and it was never fun. But
and they're also, they're so white. You're like, have they been bleached?
And we know they remind us of a thing, and it's not a good thing.
Do they even remind you of a thing?
No, but they, well, you, realistically, yes. Like,
really? Wow.
You know, you get to a certain age in life, and you've seen some things you shouldn't have seen.
No, but you know, that's an interesting conversation, though, that needs to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were even talking about, this is really not the appropriate time, but anyway, we're
going to
talk about it. You know, you were talking about in the shop how you're now supplying lubricants?
Yes. Okay, we're on, we're alive.
No, we're going.
There we go.
Right, so, and you were saying how the one that you had was like aimed, maybe the original one was aimed maybe towards an older demographic.
Yeah, a mature audience.
A mature audience. What's interesting about that is that I did this training in women's health yoga, and part of what we had was this really amazing woman who came in who did a talk on healthy menstruation practices and how to use all the natural rhythms of your cycle to make yourself just generally keep that vitality. But one of the major things that she was talking about was like women's feminine hygiene products or whatever the name is that they call them. And she was saying how when you have your period, the blood is actually meant to come out all the way out from the top, and as it runs down the walls, that encourages the lubrication and keeps the balance of the vagina the way that it should be. So there should be this
pH wise and all sorts of probably
everything.
Okay, amazing.
And then
traditionally,
obviously, like back in the day, women would have been walking around, it would have just been flowing out into the ground and then nourishing the plants, and
everything
would have been kind of this nice harmonious cycle.
Yeah.
And now when we put things in, we're stopping the blood flow.
The natural
even
flow.
Things like that, the menstrual cup. It's still not coming all the
way
down.
Yeah, we're still absorbing it before it's
ended. And then now there's all this problem with vaginal dryness and need for lubricants.
Interesting.
Whereas if we had things that in fact were encouraging that natural flow, we wouldn't have that problem and there wouldn't be a need for those things on the market.
Amazing.
And then, even more interesting than that, she was saying how if you look after your health during your menstruation, then that comes back to you when you go through menopause. So the more you look after yourself and respect those cycles when you're menstruating as a younger woman, when you come to menopause, you have less strong symptoms. You go through it with ease because you've already started to really tune in and respect that cycle.
Wow, and by respecting it, what specific processes do you think that people are like doing that they maybe could be doing more of or less of? To respect those things, like that would be realistic for somebody who's living in the real world scenario.
So
I'm sure there's some like idealistic things, maybe.
Well, yeah, exactly. So let's talk from the ideal point, and then we can kind of work back.
Okay.
So in an ideal world, you would look at how does your cycle fall, and then there are these kind of phases like spring, summer, autumn, winter within that cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
And so around the 14th day, the ovulation point, your fertile point, that's your all things to all people. You have your energy, you're giving out, you're going, you're giving talks.
Okay.
And then during the bleeding phase, that's like your winter, your internal.
Yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
listening to your dreams, you're listening to what are the signals your body's giving you. And even from a yoga's perspective, it's like you wouldn't do a yoga practice because that is your practice. The practice of cleansing is happening already inside you. So you don't need to be doing an external practice. All you need to be doing is sitting and listening and tuning into that. And then, of course, there are some restorative yoga poses that you can be doing during yoga just to lessen symptoms or if you have tender breasts.
Sure.
That kind of stuff. But you wouldn't be needing an external practice because the practice of yoga is that practice of quieting, of listening, of transformation,
rhythms,
of the whole thing. And that's happening inside you. You don't need to be looking externally to that practice. So in an ideal world, during the bleeding phase, you wouldn't be going to work. You wouldn't be burning the candle at both ends.
So we're in the idealistic phase here.
Right.
But burning the candle at both ends, that's something people can do.
Yeah, and also you can just think about maybe if you look at your month overview at the beginning of the month and you notice where you're going to be falling in that cycle, you can schedule things to fit around the 14th day fertile period and less things around the time of the bleed. So you wouldn't organise social things after work in that time.
I'd love to see a study of women who
did that versus didn't do that.
Yeah, like how naturally do we... How much does our body tell us to do? Like, how much do we have to, like, ignore our body before it stops telling us that?
Yeah. Well, I think, from what I understand, it seems to be that people are... They just tend to go, my period is this unbelievable inconvenience, and I just would rather pretend it didn't happen. So then they just take medicine and just keep on pushing through. Or even, you know, there's this rise of taking the pill where people will just keep taking the pill so they don't get the period.
They're going on.
So you might go to the doctor, and the doctor will give you this pill that you can that pushes your period back by a week, so you don't have it. And that's the danger, I think, is that we're seeing it as an inconvenience. And I think if you start listening to those cycles and you start coming into in tune with your body, it, instead of this time where you're like dreading that bleeding phase, you actually kind of look forward to it. I know that sounds mad, probably for loads of people listening, but you find it's kind of. In yoga, we have this word. I was talking about it in the facial yoga demo. Ojas, and ojas is like juices, right?
Okay, yeah.
And that can be the oils in your skin, or the thing that makes the luster in your hair, or the things that help move your joints.
It's like juiciness in Ayurveda, the juiciness of personality, that sort of
Okay, right. Gotcha. And so you're in that. You're slightly more fluid. You're able to stretch a little bit further in yoga practices.
Okay.
You're just a little bit more in your body, you know, and it's a different feeling. You're kind of.
And that's during what period?
During when you're bleeding.
Okay,
and
right.
And so if you aren't anticipating it as, like, I remember when I was little, my mum used to refer to it as the curse.
Okay.
So that's obviously
a really positive reflection. Nice.
That's setting
so you're
going to
love
then.
This. It's called the curse.
It's exactly that. Like, if that's the imagery that you're being fed from a young age, of course, when it comes around, you're thinking of it like, oh God, this thing that I'm dreading. Whereas if you start to really, really celebrate that, and if instead it was like you had this lovely treat that happened, maybe your parents took you out for a lovely treat, maybe you got some nice new clothes or a lovely thing for your bed or some nice bubble bath or something that was like, hey, this wonderful thing's happened, where now you're in this stage of womanhood where you're able to be in your power.
Yeah.
Your power, and you have the ability to listen more to what your body's telling you. And they say that during your period when you dream, you're much more likely to dream things that are either real that might happen or that might be reflective of something that's happening in your life that you need to listen to.
Wow, interesting.
And so if you respect that and you kind of take it as like a treat time where you're like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to eat rich, nourishing foods, more broths, more bone broths, more warm soups and stews, and I'm going to stay at home and kind of do a little bit of baking maybe. I'm going to light some nice candles. I'm going to just nest in. I'm going to like huddle up and nest in. That is a really healthy thing. And if we could maybe just look at our month ahead and go like, okay, so this is where that part of the month is. This is my winter, right? And in winter, what do? We sit in front of the fire. Mm-hmm. We nourish ourselves. We eat warm stuff.
Yeah.
And then, okay, this is my summer, when I'm on my 14th day. I'm around wherever yours is, because everyone's is different, but roughly around the 14th day. Then like, okay, I'm going to go out, and now I'm going to give my talks. Now I'm going to go see all my friends. Now I'm going to go for a big hike or whatever. And if we just respect the natural energies of our body like that, then we have an ability to build longevity rather than depletion.
Okay.
And I think it's that depletion that then might come back to
menopause
if we haven't really respected
it. If we're ignoring
cycles.
It for years and years and decades. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So we're shooting a podcast today. You had a yoga workshop last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you manage to do these things yourself? This is not coming from a point of judgment. Like, so do you do what you practice? Do you practice what you preach? That is not what I meant to say.
No.
But do you try to access it? Of course you try to access it, but do you manage to access it, and do you feel a difference when you do?
Right. So I think that it's a bit of both things. In an ideal world, I do, and as much as possible, I will. I mean, I'm always aware of where my cycle is, and I'm always looking at my calendar. I'll always mark it on my calendar. So when I'm looking at my calendar and someone's going, can you do these X things? If there's an option to choose dates, I won't be choosing those dates.
Okay.
But of course, with my work, it could be, can you come give a talk at this festival? I can't go, well, that festival's actually at an inconvenient time in my cycle.
I feel like those if you were that person who did that, imagine how precious you'd be seeing. If you got to the stage where you had an agent, you're like, oh, she never does things when she's in this phase of her cycle. Oh, lads, it's like, I don't, Christ, hippies.
Yeah, exactly.
But
so obviously I can't do that, but I do try to make sure if there are things I can take out of my schedule in that phase, I will do that, and I definitely won't be like going to meet my friends or doing those kind of things.
Good for you.
For sure, and I'll also be making more, looking at the food that I'm eating, so I won't be eating cold things.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't go swimming. I wouldn't really, not that I wouldn't bathe, I would have a shower, but I wouldn't have a bath in the first few days.
Okay.
And I wouldn't expose myself to cold, so I try and support my kidneys.
Okay.
Do you know that product, the Harriman?
Yeah, the Genki Haramaki.
So cool, right?
We tell everybody about this in the shop, because when we talk about like kidney infections and UTIs, so in TCM it's called kidney cold, essentially, and they don't, they're really conscious of like, the kidneys are like, if you ever see like depictions of them, quite often in Japanese, like Shinto, whatever philosophy, there's a really lovely story of the girl in the bamboo, or the princess in the bamboo. Go and look it up, I can't remember the whole thing. It's a really beautiful thing. And every time they kind of depict it, they depict a little girl as kind of like a little kidney-shaped thing. And there's something, you know, nestling and nesting and looking after the kidneys from an energetic, whatever, Eastern philosophy point of view.
Those adrenals are like and the hats on the
that's
top.
That's what
right?
I was going to say, because then the adrenals are like, exactly, the hats on the top. And the adrenals, when it comes to energy nurturing, we know about adrenals. Like, it's one of the things that Western science will embrace. We don't have to kind of, look to whatever weird kind of hippie bro science, whatever. There's a lot of like good foundational stuff that shows, you know, that if you look after your kidneys, kidney health, adrenal health will follow. The two, like my mum calls it, like the kidneys are the batteries of the body.
Exactly.
Yeah. So like the Haramaki, essentially, yeah, what you're saying is like a little scarf they wear.
Yeah.
Throughout
it's like
the
a
winter.
Band, and yeah. We have one. So my son has one.
Oh really?
I have one. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And we'd wear them then in the winter. They're like
good stuff.
I'm like completely addicted to hot water bottles.
Okay.
That person, like next time comes, I have my hot water bottle.
Okay.
And the Haramaki is kind of the replacement of that.
Yeah.
You know, my mother was always telling me, make sure your kidneys are covered with coats.
Yeah.
Like when I was a teenager and I used to want to wear like cropped jackets.
I think all mothers were bad about belly tops, but
yeah.
I don't think it was for the same reason, possibly.
I don't think I was a belly top kind of a person,
yeah.
But I do think that I did wear like cropped jackets, and she would always be
sure.
Like, keep your kidneys warm.
Yeah.
And it's that, really. I mean, you're keeping your kidneys warm, literally. So it's like a little band. It's ribbed so that it can expand.
Yeah.
And it just sits around your belly and all the way around the back. And you can wear it underneath jeans, underneath tops or whatever. And it just stops
magic.
The chill getting in.
Makes
and it's also really good postnatally and when you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. When you're pregnant, it's obviously this lovely support there. So
oh
it's
wow.
A little bit like those support bands that you have. For
yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course.
And then postnatally, you know how now there's this big trend for wrapping and everything kind of being sucked back in and to aid that shrinking down of the womb afterwards. It's like that. You have this little warmth that's around there, and there's a little bit of pressure. And after you give birth, you kind of feel, it's so weird, but you kind of feel like, not that everything's going to fall out, but you've had this proprioception of here.
Yeah.
Like this was where your belly is, and suddenly your belly's not there, it's here. But it doesn't feel quite here yet.
Okay.
Like in your head, you haven't quite made it
this
here.
This is like the false limb thing almost a little
yeah,
bit. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you have the Haramaki in it, it kind of gives you this comforting reassurance
of where
it
begins
it
and ends. You know, I actually wonder about that a lot. Because so when I have like, this is here we go, so back to me. I have like hip dysplasia, right?
From when you were born?
I assume from when I was born.
And did you have to be in a cast?
No, like amazing. So. I don't know. I don't harbor like a lot of ill will towards my parents for this, but essentially nothing ever got done about it. And I always remember when I was in school, you wore those deck shoe things, which are quite like heavy soles. I remember walking home from school when I was like third year and fourth year and kind of having to drag my right leg. It's just sort of a vague thing. So it's not like such bad hip dysplasia that you know, it's not life ending. I can still train, which is lovely. But I really noticed like every time I'm doing whatever, lunge positions or like, you know, split squats, that sort of stuff, like, this clicks
a lot.
That sort of stuff, yeah, and pistol squats and that sort of stuff, yeah. I enjoy that, like bodyweight things. Yeah. But I find that that weirdly the clothes that I'm wearing have a really strong informing aspect on where my body begins and ends.
Okay.
And I don't know whether this is something that's been researched or not at all. But like, so if you're like today, I'm actually wearing like annoying jeans that are annoyingly too tight, skinny jeans. Where did they come from? I don't know, but I bought into it at some point, and. I find that when I do that, I know the end of my hips and the front of my quads know where they are. Like in maybe in not such a good way. There's like a lack of looseness because you sort of feel like, oh, that's where it ends. Like I don't, and even the shoes that I'm wearing, it tells you where your foot is in the world.
Mm.
And that's why like I have, everyone always kills me because I have like a million pairs of shoes. The reason why I do it is not because I'm like Imelda Marcus, but because I feel like every day if I have a different shoe on, I have a different way of kind of patterning the world around me, and my body moves genuinely differently in it. I'm like, it sounds ridiculous, but it really makes a monstrous difference to how I like. If I have a week of one pair of shoes, which happens very rarely, like really, like almost never, I notice a monster difference in terms of like I start to tighten up hamstrings, like my posture. It's like there's a woman who does she's a kinesiologist in the States. I've heard her on podcasts talking about this, where she refers to everything from our clothes and our even like our environments as being casts.
So like where she talks about like when we're in environments, internal environments, and we're like in an office where we never focus more than like 20 feet away from us, and most of the time it's like 3 feet because it's a screen, that this puts a cast on our eyes. And the more you put that cast on, the less you're essentially, and this is obvious because you're like, you're not exercising the muscle. And I think there's kind of something similar about, I don't know whether skinny jeans are going to cause like an absolute, I don't know, like whatever, a pandemic of like issues with like mobility in later life. But I genuinely feel like when we have that restriction in clothing terms and a consistent restriction where we're not varying it, I think that's going to play a lot into how our body feels about how where it can be in the world. I know your thing is a much more maybe genuine and needed thing when you talk to the Haramaki and stuff, but like it is that kind of false limb syndrome, I think. Like, and you know the way they talk about when you get into like tweena and tapping, like knowing where your body is and even telling yourself where parts of your diaphragm are, and there's some really interesting kinesiology things like holding on to touching certain parts of your chest before doing certain positions that make a massive difference relationally to how your physiology actually behaves. Like it's the stuff we're not even like on the cusp of exploring yet. Yeah. And it sounded like hippie stuff 10-15 years ago. Kinesiology is kind of getting the right kind of rule in the States. That's some big win. I hope you can still hear us. If you can't hear us, we're going to keep chatting. But yeah, so there's an embracing of that relational dynamic, particularly when it comes to physical therapies, not so much when it comes to like nutrition and natural medicine, but in terms of like physios now are all getting into this idea of trigger point therapy, myofascial release, where they know that like if you have a problem in your foot, you don't look at treating the foot, you look at something possibly between the scapula. You've got all sorts of different like relational things going on there, which I think are really interesting. I don't know how that relates back to your Genki Haramaki, but I think I think that casts idea.
I think that's even, you know, if you come back to yoga then, and everyone's barefoot in yoga, or at least ideally they would be barefoot. And it's actually fascinating for me because I spent a lot of my childhood barefoot. Grew up halfway up a mountain and we were just running around barefoot all the time. Shoes were something
we need to know more about this.
We'll talk about that. And so then you're using your foot, really, you're using every part of your foot to feel like, okay, there's a rock here, there's a fern here. And you really use that foot. You're so in touch with every part of that foot, and then that translates to your body, and that's moving naturally. And then as soon as we draw ourselves away from the earth,
put a shoe on it,
then, and the thicker that sole, obviously, or even come to a high heel,
you're
drawing yourself away from the earth, and you're like less grounded.
Yeah, there's a really interesting study that was released in the States last year where they looked at IQ scores and kids who spent more time barefoot versus in shoes, and it genuinely showed up like it's like a statistical significant difference, a bump in IQ when kids were spent more time barefoot.
Wow.
So development of the nervous system, development of brain function, cognitive function is actually related to that. So what you're talking about is not just like, it's not hippie science, it's for real. And I mean, things that make sense to us, we shouldn't, I feel like I'm being pejorative about that because it's not really fair, because I think that innate wisdom, we know it's right, but we, unfortunately, me particularly, but people in the West of this, want to prove it. And it's always nice when you get that kind of like, aha, so there is some science behind that. But it's pretty profound.
You're right. And it's funny though, isn't it, that dichotomy between going, we need to have something tangible, so it doesn't feel like there's this thing that we're going on this into the ether and we're talking about stuff.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, isn't there something beautiful about like trust?
Yeah.
Just that trust and belief and that trust in yourself, because when you're thinking about something, you feel it in your heart. You're like, I just feel there's something wrong with X in my body.
Yeah.
I just feel it. And there's no other signs. You don't fit into any of the categories. You're going to the doctor. No. And then suddenly it gets proven in some way. Okay, yeah, there was a problem with that. Okay, so that's nice. It feeds back into going, okay, I was right.
Yeah.
But it almost takes away from that, because it almost stops you. It means that you're always looking externally to go, I need that validation to trust what I actually know in my body. Whereas if we actually just know it in our body, wouldn't it be nice if we were able to go, this is just as much a valid piece of fact because my body is telling me that
as
this external thing of this person who does not know my body,
who
has not lived in this body, in this soul skin for their whole life, telling me that information that I'm trusting. And it comes back to that personal responsibility thing we were talking about the other day, of going like, we need to step up and take ownership of our bodies.
Yeah.
And in yoga class, that's the same thing. You know, we as teachers, we're guiding a self-practice. So
there's
a load of people doing a self-practice in a room of people.
Yeah, this
it's
is the
not like
idea
we're all practicing together and doing this thing that I'm
following
telling
the leader
you to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm always trying to say that in my classes, like, have the empowerment to go, this does not feel good for me. Whatever you've just, whatever shape you've shown me,
okay.
just doesn't feel good for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I have the empowerment to say, I'm not going to do that. Either can you show me a different way? Or like, can I just move my foot there and go, okay, no one else is moving their foot there, but you know what, that actually feels better. And
yeah.
That feels less jarring, it feels more comfortable, it feels less stagnant, it feels less, the word when
restricted
things,
or?
Yeah, yeah kind okay. of restricted, yeah. like there's no blockages.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. So there's like, there's a I think it's in Fiji or one of the South Sea Islands, I think, where they have a really interesting kind of language relationship with our intuition, and they refer to us having three brains. So our stomach is our primary brain, actually. Our gut is our primary brain. Our heart is our secondary brain. And our brain, that one that we like put all of the weight on in Western world, is our like third brain. And actually they have the same word for that brain as the word when they get their nets, their fishing nets caught up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if they get their fishing nets caught up, they have that same like expletive, essentially, that they refer to this brain as, which is really interesting, that kind of tangled
the
mess.
The tangliness.
And the fact that it's just getting in the way of like the flow of
the
fishing.
Free flow.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. And the lady that that developed the GAPS diet, Natasha
Campbell-McBride, yeah.
She has that same thing about talking about the brain, the primary
the gut brain
being the gut, and then this being like our secondary or maybe even tertiary brain there.
Yeah, we have this amazing nerve called the vagus nerve, this pathway. Mm. I don't know if you've looked into this, but
a little bit. It's not my area for sure.
I'm no expert, but the stuff they have looked at when it comes to the vagus nerve, it has such a controlling factor. It's one of the few nervous system pathways that has controls over like physicality in terms of like actually moving muscles and the autonomous part of our nervous system. So like our heart rate, and weirdly, so it can control. So when you in a day that your vagus nerve is not so toned, you won't make eye contact well with people. So it controls eye contact. And it controls empathy as well as controlling these physical functions. It'll control like it can influence where. So we sense people's heart rate around us. Actually, we spoke about this in that recent article thing we just put out.
Yeah.
That your heart rate has this ability to empathetically match people around you or to not match people around you, and that is your vagus nerve that's involved in that control and that impulse. And you can like toning the vagus nerve is an amazing thing as well. So have you come across this idea of toning it?
I haven't actually. No.
Okay, so toning the vagus nerve. What's lovely is it's all of the things you can do for the free. There's nothing you can buy to tone your vagus nerve. But like things like gargling really help to tone your vagus nerve.
Mm.
Chanting helps tone your vagus nerve. So that that sort of, any of the sort of vibrational things really tone the vagus nerve. Cold water exposure. So if you're going to bed at night, and so when you activate or when you tone the vagus nerve, you also improve your ability to get into parasympathetic nervous system activity. So you're slowing down your rest and digest phase.
And that's our counteractive. That counteracts the effects of stress in the body.
Big time, hugely. Like in a massive way. It's healing, it's anti-inflammatory, it's all the restorative processes that your body needs to go through when it goes to sleep. So when you, before you go to bed at night, you can do one really simple thing, splashing like really cold water just around your eyes, and that really helps to tone the vagus nerve as well. And it's got an amazing refreshing feel when you do it. It's like, wow. Like it's more so than any other splashing of water that I've found on the body. And I do a lot of cold water exposure bits, but I found that splashing water on the eyes and just kind of holding it, it's just a lovely feeling, because it's very cold initially, it's kind of shocking, and then your hands warm up and your eyes warm up, and you feel also like just holding your face like that has got some sort of like energetic thing, like in traditional Chinese medicine as well, like that center of your palm is the extension of your heart. So when we're shaking hands with people, we're connecting the heart, and so when we're doing that with our eyes, like maybe there's some other kind of like self-healing aspect,
isn't it? In the beginning of yoga, whenever I teach a yoga class, the beginning at the end of the yoga class, we always rub our hands like this and get that warmth and energy into them, so we activate the nervous system to prepare the body for movement in the beginning and at the end to move us out of Shavasana and into preparing the body for movement, coming back into our day.
Okay, yeah.
And then once they're warm, we place each hand over each eye.
Okay.
And we absorb that warmth back into the eye, back into the eye socket, even further back into the brain,
so there is something
slowly
about
waking
that.
Us up.
Oh,
and so when we were talking about eye exercises and neuroplasticity of the brain.
Oh, wow,
and
yeah.
So the tone of the eyes and how we engage the eye in exercises, how we can do these very, very simple eye exercises that will, on a basic level, they'll help us to maybe improve our sight prescription. So if you wear contact lenses, if you wear glasses, you can actually reverse that slightly.
Okay,
and I did that, and I did reverse it.
Right.
But also, when I work with children with additional needs, our eye exercises would be the cornerstone of therapy. It would be the cornerstone of the therapeutic yoga practices
really?
That you're doing.
That's where it
because
starts.
As you do it, you're building neural pathways in the brain.
Yeah.
In areas
okay.
that might be lacking for whatever reason developmentally.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at people and they're tracking their eyes and you're mm-hmm. doing those exercises mm-hmm. with them, you might find that when they're looking side to side, instead of a smooth transition of the eyeball going side to side like this, that they can track almost like they were painting a continuous line across mm-hmm. the eyeball. They might be able to go from here to here, but it would be like
it kind of, oh,
a jump,
interesting.
And there'd be an area in the middle that doesn't work. Or it could just be left side just doesn't want to work, the whole head just wants to go there.
That's so interesting.
And that relates to whatever pathway in the brain is in lack, is in a place of lack. And the more you work that, you exercise that area and it stimulates that pathway, then you build those pathways. And so we see huge, huge improvements in, you know, physicality and crossing the midline and all of those things that, that might be troubling children or adults also.
Crossing the midline, what's that?
A thing that's really hard for children and some adults to do, if they have maybe some kind of developmental delay, they could mm-hmm. be on some kind of spectrum, is crossing the midline. So
okay.
the midline of our body being here, the center line, anything that crosses
okay.
the midline here is hard to do.
So it's like physically moving.
I'm like, oh, I want to shake
going
your hand.
Going from there past.
And you have to cross across your body.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that would be one. And in the eye exercises, we would try and involve hand movements that cross the midline at the same time. As
and
eye.
Is it hands, legs, everything?
Everything. Okay, anything crossing the midline.
Amazing. Okay, so March is Brain Month. We might as well mention this as well, because we've talked about possibly doing something around eye training yoga workshop in Hopsack.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. So
Love.
I could do maybe 20 minutes of eye exercises ranging from the most basic ones up to a little bit more complicated ones.
Cool.
And that would just be, so as opposed to the facial yoga which we did last month, it would be literally just the eye exercises.
We're getting stiller and stiller. We're going to have like no body involved at all. It'd be like, spirit, that's
walking,
it, done.
People walking by, what? Are
what are they actually doing?
but we
They're
can talk a little bit about like what are the implications of that. So that would be interesting.
That'd be amazing.
Useful for everyone, you know, anyone. I wear contact lenses and I notice as I get older, obviously my prescription's getting worse. Or when I got pregnant, it did a big jump backwards. And that's common. That would be common. You lose tone.
Sure. Yeah, in many ways.
You're just losing that tone.
Okay.
And obviously, the more you exercise it, the more you build it back up again.
Okay.
And so there's simple things that you could do with any kid, if your kid is typical or non-typical.
Yeah.
If you have something in your body even that you've noticed, like, oh, my memory's starting to get a little bit worse these days, or you know, any kind of function that you had once that was improved and now is less improved, you can use eye exercises to help.
It's really empowering message, and it's really nice that you can, like, you know, that you can. They only discovered rather recently about BDNF and the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that we can grow brain cells. We always thought this idea when you have a hangover that I'm sorry, you've lost them.
Yeah.
They're gone. Those few thousand, you're not going to get them back. But actually, you know, not that we want to like be too permissive about that, but whatever we do that we when we cause damage to the body's amazing want to heal. All we have to do is let it heal. We have to like kind of
And that's the neuroplasticity thing. They did a big study where they got a load of typists, and they studied them with eye exercises before and after. How many words per minute?
That one. Went,
and they increased massively. And then they did another one with memory. Big increase in that.
Wow.
But what's so beautiful, I think, about it, and it's what really makes me excited about yoga, is that this is a part of yoga that everyone can do. Anyone can do it. It doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter what body type you have, and it doesn't matter what time you have.
Yeah.
You can do 5 minutes, and these tiny micro actions can make macro change. And that's what's really interesting for me, is in our life, we always look to, like, okay,
grand
I'm
going
to detox everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to get rid of all sugar. I'm going to do yoga 10 days. You know, in a row, and then I'm going to go do the hot yoga thing, and I'm going
to
immerse for a month and all these things. And then we just cannot sustain
that.
So we just burn out. And then the thing is that when we burn out from that, when we don't sustain it, we feel bad about it.
Mm.
And then there's this negative association.
Self-criticism stuff,
I couldn't do that, I failed at that.
Mm.
Whereas if we take those little micro steps, something that's bite-sized, and it might be tiny, it might be 5 eye exercises a day, it might be I'm going to not put sugar in my tea or something, but something really achievable.
Yeah.
And then, you know what, you do it for a month, hey, I did that for a month.
Yeah.
And you feel good, and then you're more inclined to build another one on and build another one on. And then before you know it, you've made that macro change, but it hasn't felt like this jarring
giant
big thing
jump into
that involves guilt and recrimination.
It's
just like positive, and it's realistic, and like, let's be kind to us.
And there's self-reinforcing as well. Like, a lot of those things, when you start, I don't know, I mean, like, I didn't have the healthiest, like, childhood. I was reasonably rebellious from my late teens to, like, mid-20s, and I found when I started to like introduce some of the practices that I was beginning to learn about as I kind of started to kind of get interested in health and started to work in the shop, that I mean, they're not hard to keep going at all. Yeah, they're tough to start. It's kind of like wheatgrass shots. It's like, you know, always the bitter pill. Like, they're a little bit tough initially, but there's this lovely kind of process where some part of you wants to go back to it. Like, I started like cold water exposure a few years ago in terms of cold showers, and I started sea swimming during the winter the year before last, and it seems bonkers. And the first time you go to it, you're like, it is bonkers. And you come out and you're like shocked and euphoric. And actually, to be fair, I wasn't euphoric. I was like, everyone says shocked and euphoric, and I wasn't. I was shocked.
Like,
I wasn't. I was
like, freezing.
I'm just freezing. I'm chattering. I'm actually chipping a tooth because I'm chattering so badly. I just want to go back inside. But weirdly, a week later, you're like, I want to go do that again. I don't know why. And it wasn't. I don't think it was an ego thing, although it's tough to disentangle those two things sometimes. But I'm pretty sure it was just like my body going, I got something from that. It helped me like have a, you know, more clear mind during the week. I was actually less self-critical during the week. Those sort of, definitely less self-criticism seems to come with a lot. It's like cold water exposure and less self-criticism. I've noticed a big difference, big correlation for me.
And I think isn't it also just about change, and how like change is really uncomfortable in the beginning, but then you kind of crave that thing. So
absolutely.
So I remember being shown this once, that in a yoga class a teacher was doing this and getting us to just like circle
the wrist rails,
and then going, okay, now change the cross and do it that way. And everyone's like,
ooh,
with the face,
yeah,
and she's
like,
see that weird feeling?
Yeah.
That's what change feels like.
Yeah, okay, yeah, cool, yeah.
And it is that. It's like, it's all, is it good? Do I like it? I'm not quite sure, but I'm still doing it, so.
It's just discomfort,
it's just
isn't it?
Discomfort, yeah. And it's about renaming, changing that narrative, renaming it, and just going, this is a sensation. And then, how is this sensation? I'm just introducing it into my life, and how does that fit with my life? Is that interesting for me? Does it feel good? Does it not feel good? As opposed to like, this is a negative thing, this is a positive thing.
Exactly, not
and
the dualistic.
Reinforcing those labels that we put on them, I think. And it's changing habits. We always feel good when we change habitual ways that we do things, when we bring a new route in on the way to work or whatever.
Yeah.
It just opens our horizons, and
hugely.
It comes back to that thing you were just saying about, we're looking at the screen and we've limited ourselves into this box, and we feel it, we know it, we know that we've put a limitation on ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we come here and we look around and there's just this stretch of the eye, as far as you can see, Sugarloaf over there.
It's quite
all
nice.
The hills.
Sorry you're not here, guys.
Then it enables us to have free speech, right? To think, to have our ideas, as it's evident, to have our ideas just ramble from one to another without the limitation of rules, without the limitation of routine, without the limitation of habits.
Yeah. Cool. We're going to have to end this fairly soon because we're running out of podcast battery. What should we do before we finish? So there's a couple of things. We did mention that, Lydia, you're going to come to the shop. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
So March workshop. Look out for that. We'll be posting that through Facebook and Instagram and all these sorts of things. What else is lovely? You've brought lovely things.
Yeah.
You made lovely things. You should definitely tell people about the lovely things you made before we go.
Oh, yeah. So I made these amazing scones, which are all sticky and covered in delicious.
Yum.
And they are sweet potato scones with a gluten-free flour, because my family will have a tough time with gluten. And then they have
difficult relationship.
We do. It's challenging for us. They have turmeric in there for anti-inflammatory properties, a little bit of black pepper to help the absorption of the turmeric.
Nice.
And this actually comes from a recipe that my neighbour put up on her blog.
Oh, cool.
I kind of slightly adapted it, but she's called Ferry, Ferrie, family meals. Word. And she has nice little healthy stuff that you can do for your family.
That's cool.
And
check
this comes
out
from that, so you should check them out because they're delicious. And they're great for lunchbox snacks.
Delicious. Super sticky. I love it. Lunchbox snacks. Are they nut-free on the inside?
Mm-hmm.
For all those?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Actually nut-free.
Because nut-free is such a prolific thing these days.
Isn't it? And it's very hard. It's amazing how, if you're someone who, like, we're not good with dairy, we're not good with gluten, it's such a cliche, but it really doesn't work for us. So we've already cut out those two things, and so nuts are something that we actually build into a lot of our baking products. It's really hard to go, okay, whoa,
I
have to think about using seeds or using different things.
And be creative with them.
It's hard not to swing the balance to sweet, that's what I find, is with the baking. Once you take out those things, you end up going to fruits, you end up going to dates, and those things are delicious. But when I'm looking at my son's lunchbox, he's three, I don't want to be looking at all the compartments in his lunchbox and going, sweet, 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 because then his mood's just going to go,
I've no doubt, as mine certainly did.
His poor teachers, I don't want to.
Yeah, that's basically, it's an
send
insult
him
to them,
off to
isn't
school.
It? Yeah.
Have fun, guys.
He's all yours.
Yeah.
Happy 8 hours. So the other thing, actually, we've got with us here is a little hamper box from the Hopsack. which we're going to give away to one of you guys.
Holy moly.
Whatever we don't end up eating at the mountain, sorry. So what have we got? We've got some of Lydia and my favourite snacks. Have you tried innate yet?
I haven't tried those.
We're going to have to open these. We'll get you another packet, I promise you. Innate snacks are amazing. They're like grain-free, yummy things. They're like savoury little snack things. They look tiny. They kind of cost a little bit, but oh my God, they're filling. Like there's only, you've got like butternut squash, 40% butternut squash, onion, capsicum, almonds, okay, coconut, garlic, lemon juice, salt, herbs and spices, speaking of nuts.
Oh, so that's cool, so they're like a savoury yeah, cracker snack.
Absolutely, like a cracker snack, exactly, yeah. Which is really cool. So they come in like a few different flavours, we've got a few of them in
oh,
there.
Oh, and then these guys.
Oh, and then, I knew you were going to reach in again then.
I just haven't, they're so good. These mindful bites, if you haven't tried them, honestly, I feel like I'm like a product rep.
You become an ambassador.
It's so funny. But they are literally the most delicious things. And they're kind of like a biscuit vibe with a filling in the inside. So do you know those like, I think there's like a Nutella roll.
Just say Kinder Bueno, just say it.
Okay, they're just like Kinder Bueno. But they're like the healthy Kinder Bueno. So they're just buckwheat flour, quinoa flour, amaranth flour. And then they have like a nut butter.
Yeah, like nut butter pasty thing.
They're really good because what's funny about them is they trick you into thinking that you're eating a sweet thing.
Oh, totally.
They have the feeling of a sweet thing, but they're actually not sweet. They
super
don't
high protein, so super high fat, like no sweets.
No, there's
like,
there's
no dates involved, which is magic.
I like just yakon syrup.
Yakon syrup, which is a prebiotic fiber.
And that's very low.
Low GI. Yeah. It's zero GI. It's fermentable, so it passes straight through your gut, tastes sweet, and doesn't last, and is very natural. Yum yum. Mm-hmm. Next thing, Nutmose. If you haven't come across Nutmose before, they're a rather good company, an Irish company. Andrew.
Oh, you have the flavoured ones.
Yeah, they're back. The maple activated walnuts are back.
Oh, wow. I saw a post on their Instagram about that the other day, and I was going, that's the dream.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I know. There was a lot of people who were crying about these being gone. They were gone for a long time, to be fair. They are heaven. Like, tiny bit of maple syrup, but activated so that they're sprouted, so that you've got like all the live enzymes, all the, like, they're essentially mildly, let's say, pre-digested, to put a kind of a coin a term. So you get lots of benefit nutrient wise. No phytate, which is an important thing. Everyone's freaking out about phytate these days. Have you tried these?
Is phytate the coating on the nut?
Phytate is phytic acid. No, it's no, contained within within the nut, but it's like,
and you're that's the thing that if you soak it. It's less.
Exactly. Right. You break down really easily. It's like there's a bit of an excess kind of freak out about it.
My amazing acupuncturist.
That sounds good.
Doesn't it? I'm so, like, I'm a yoga person. My amazing acupuncturist. But she's amazing. She's called Fiona. She works. It used to be the Gate Clinic. I'm not sure. I think it's now Fiona Rafael Acupuncture in Greystones.
Okay.
She's brilliant. She's a women's health specialist as well. She's super knowledgeable, and I send loads of my clients there. She was saying to her, I was talking to her about that and going, like, do I have to soak all my nuts as well? There's so much stuff I have to do in food preparation.
Processes are tough.
I just don't know that I can handle soaking all my nuts.
Yeah.
She was saying that actually, no, I probably get this wrong, Sophia. Sorry. the phytic acid coating, she was saying it's actually there and it has a very, very important process in our body. And I wish I could remember exactly
so
what that
most,
process
most
was.
So most anti-nutrients, nearly all, like, so oxalic acid is another one that you get in a lot of green veggies. They say it's one of the reasons why we shouldn't have a lot of like, raw spinach and that sort of stuff and raw kales. Anti-nutrients, like, the whole thing around antioxidants and anti-nutrients and those sort of things is kind of evolving, because we're discovering that antioxidants, like, for instance, like, the antioxidants in green tea, it doesn't actually, well, one of the main ones, doesn't actually help us, it slightly harms us.
Okay.
And it's actually that harmful
that
process.
And stimulates the
exactly.
Response.
It's
okay.
Called hormesis. It's an amazing thing, and our body's really good at, like, toning its kind of, like, its supportive kind of genetic processes, like glutathione shuttling and all these sorts of interesting things, that then start to, like, essentially make your body better the next time around. It's sort of like like a muscle training for your
yeah,
cells.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It sounds like that you just, like, put a little bit of a stimuli response, and
yeah.
It goes...
Exactly. And it's like, okay, oh, I know what to do in response to this. It's really good. Which,
okay.
So that's a really nice thing. So phytate, I might be part of that conversation. I think it might be part of that conversation.
I'm going to go back and talk to you about it, and we'll talk about it on another...
Defo. Next time we'll have a proper
related.
Answer. Dr. Google. So, yeah. No, we'll go beyond Dr. Google,
Dr.
I promise.
Dr. Fiona.
Yeah, Dr. Fiona, exactly. Have you tried these?
I haven't.
So I shouldn't have these for breakfast.
Life,
I know. Oh dear, sorry. So raw organic chocolate almonds. This is like my actual best friend and worst enemy in the whole shop. If I walk past them during the day and my peripheral vision just catches them, I know I'm going to buy another bag. Actually, there's a guy in the shop the other night who was going to the cinema, and you know, it's not the blokiest looking snack. Let's be fair. And he was kind of a blokey looking bloke, and he was going to a blokey film, and he was like. Getting a couple of bits, and he kind of got coconut water. I was like, okay, maybe he's ready for the girly raw chocolate almonds. I was like, if you want one really amazing thing that I guarantee won't be the last time you have it, try those beyond. He's like, those ones? I was like, yeah, the pink ones. He's like, okay. And he picked them up, to be fair, he bought them. They're not cheap. They're like about 7 or 8 quid. And but they're magic. And so he was back. Oh, lovely, a nice bug. I hope it's not a bitey bug.
It doesn't look like.
Doesn't look like a bitey bug.
He's just coming to hang out. Here we go.
Has he got anything to say?
I'm going to just place him here.
Nice. But so anyway, that guy was back in the shop yesterday, and guess what he had in his hand? Another bag of almonds. They're that good. They really are.
Starting a revolution. I feel like we also need to plan a podcast for talking about like terminology around like blokey films and blokey this.
Yes.
And feeding into like what is it now? How can we? Not necessarily how can we change it, but it's interesting like having a son now.
Yeah.
Just looking at what are those things that are actually male, female, and where is the blur, and how can we change that with a language or how we approach it, and how much of it is really just innate, and it isn't actually like stereotyping, it's like real thing
that's
happened.
It's just who we are.
My son, he just, one day, we were driving past a digger, and he just went, digger!
Yeah.
I've never even noticed a digger, and then it was all diggers for a year. Every digger, wow. He knew everything. I know all the names of different types of
Brilliant.
Diggers.
Give us some reality there. Go on, chuck it out.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, more things like, No, not like that. More like, you know, I could go to a building site and go, okay, there's the steamroller.
That's okay, okay, good. Okay, so generally not things
not
you're
like
usually comfortable
Ferguson
with. Okay.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah. But you got that, though. That was good. Well done.
There was no part of me that went, he's a boy, I'm going to take him to a building site.
Yeah,
he'll probably
wasn't
like
encouraged.
It. He just spied it out the window and he got obsessed. And that's like a blokey thing, boy thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that many girl children that are interested in diggers. You know, they might come and they might play with them in his house, but they wouldn't like themselves.
The obsession thing, yeah.
And so that was innate. I mean, that was just it. Or was it, though? Like, was there something? And he hadn't been watching television ever up to that point.
You do wonder. Is there a Darren Brown moment where he saw another boy who he really liked, respected, pick up a digger and go, this is cool?
What is that?
I don't know.
And as a mom of a son, I thought I was going to have a girl, and I was like, here, I've studied women's studies, I know about menstrual cycles, I'm going to do this beautiful maniky thing, and you know, all those things that I felt like, okay, I'm going to be able to do those things that weren't given to me, that I'm going to be able to give this beautiful information.
Yeah,
then I had a boy,
and
it was
son
like,
at 12 would be weird.
Oh, hang on, you.
We're going off in the woods.
Like that weird mom. Blinking going to be the weird mom anyway, but I feel like there's a different responsibility now, like as the mom of a son, to go, okay, well, now I have to flip it around to the side that I'm not comfortable with, that I haven't really studied, that I can't possibly have innate knowledge of myself. And then go like, how can I instill that respectfulness
and culture something that's interesting and stimulate them with things you're interested in without sending them down a certain path.
Exactly.
It's a toughie.
Exactly. Mm. So
okay.
That's another one.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that's number two. We're supposed to be talking about things we've done that, you know, scared us.
This is kind of scary, though.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, here we go. There's one. Definitely. Well, I don't feel that scared.
No,
it's quite nice. It's sunny. It's like if it was snowing and it was like a few degrees colder, it is only 4 degrees, but I think it could have been a tougher day.
This morning, I was like, I don't know, I just feel like a bit of a wimp and I'm not sure if I want to tell Finn.
I know, it's because you're...
I'm just really cold right now and I don't really want to go up a mountain and talk about it, but now that I'm here, it's just so
it's
nice.
It's a good idea. Yeah, so like, whatever, I think we said yesterday, it'd be whatever. Like, yeah, we up a half six, whatever, drop us a text. We both wimped out on that first text until at least I think we saw the sun at 7:30. I think that's when
we were like, okay,
I think it's happening, it's all right. Yeah, it feels like a day that we can do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of brave though, right?
Yeah.
Because if we lived in LA and we were going, let's start a podcast series where we go up mountains or at least up to elevated places of beauty in our environment, that wouldn't be that weird, because like, sure, you just do a hike in your shorts and I'll be at a bra top and it will be
done.
Very, very nice and sunny and wholesome looking.
Lululemon sponsored us like that. Yeah. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Not me anyway, unfortunately.
Like they wouldn't sponsor me, but anyway. Here we are and we're in Ireland and it's February. And we're like, you know what would be great? Let's start a podcast.
I had a dream.
Off a mountain. I did actually dream this into existence. But I think
that's
we're great.
That's a bit too weird. We should maybe talk about that again.
Yeah, we will. Okay, we'll talk about dreams another time. So
okay.
We've got a good few topics. And then also people can just write.
Oh, yeah. So
write in if you have topics that you'd like to see us chat about or if you're interested in exploring or that kind of thing.
And our favourite comment each time will win some stuff. In this case, little box of tricks from the Hopsack.
First time, big hamper.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good start. But we have to, like, we've set a precedent now, so we're going to have to keep that up.
That's on you, Finn.
Oh, really? Oh, thanks. Well, if you're going to keep baking like that, then cool. Happy days. We'll make it work.
I'll bake the things for us, and then you can bring the stuff from your shop to give away.
Perfect. It's a match made in heaven. Cool.
Perfect.
Thank you. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Bye.